This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Flashback Friday edition of the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. As he rapidly approaches 1,000 episodes of this podcast, he has handpicked individual episodes that he feels is going to be good review for you to prepare you for the future by listening to the past. Let's dive in.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Creating Wealth. This is Jason Hartman, your host, and I'm glad you're here with us today listening. We want to remind you to be sure to also subscribe to our video podcast. I will be the first to admit that we haven't been as active as we'd like to on the video podcast, but we do have some really good stuff coming up for you there. If you are an iTunes user, you can go to the iTunes store, type in Jason Hartman, and you'll notice that two podcasts come up. One is our audio podcast. That's sort of our main foundational podcast where most of our content is, but some of it is better said via video. So be sure to subscribe to the video podcast. You can either do that at our website, jasonhartman.com, or you can do it if you are an iTunes user at the iTunes store. Today I'd like to talk about one of my favorite of my 10 commandments for successful investors, and that is commandment number 3, thou shalt maintain control. This is probably one of the most important aspects of investing. My 93-year-old grandmother, a long time ago, told me a great word of wisdom here. She said, Jason, the hardest ship to sail is a partnership. Isn't that brilliant? The hardest ship to sail is a partnership. And if you think about it, when you invest in a stock or a bond, or you invest in someone else's deal, in someone else's venture in any way, you are basically, in a way, a partner in their business, in their real estate deal, in their finance company, if it's a bond, for example. And you are subject to whatever they do. You are either going to be the beneficiary of what they do, or you're going to be the victim of what they do. And most of the time, as investors, when we invest in someone else's deal, we find ourselves as the victim of what somebody else does. And if you've ever been in a partnership, in a business with another person, you know how difficult a partnership can be. We say that you should always be a direct investor. Thou shalt maintain control. So when you're investing, don't invest in anyone else's deal of any kind, whether that be a stock or a real estate deal. There are many companies out there offering tenant in common investments, TICs, they call them for short, T-I-C, TIC, tenant in common. You know, a friend of mine came to one of my seminars a couple months ago, and he's made some money in TICs as the promoter of TICs, not as a passive investor in TICs. He said to me when I was talking about commandment number 3, he said, I kind of understand why you have to bash TICs. It's because you don't offer them and you don't sell them. Well, I beg to differ. We have been asked to promote TICs a zillion times. People have called me one time, just one time, several years ago. We had a TIC or tenant in common investment promoter come in and promote their TIC deal, which is a partnership in essence, not the legal definition of partnership, but it in essence is a form of a partnership. We don't like them. They pay commissions. They are constantly offering to come into our meetings. They want to talk to our investors. They want me to interview them on my podcast so that they can promote their deal to you. Remember, you're listening to Flashback Friday. Our new episodes are published every Monday and Wednesday. Our core principle is that you should be a direct investor. Now, this may somehow change sometime in the future, but as far as I can see, I don't think it will. So, maintain control. Don't invest in anybody else's deal. When I talk about this in my seminars, and if you've heard me talk about the Ten Commandments of Successful Investing, which is a prior podcast, many podcasts ago, I believe it might be number 16, if my memory serves correct, I quote Lou Dobbs. And Lou Dobbs wrote a book that I discovered while I was skiing in Colorado last year, and it's called War on the Middle Class. You may have listened to Lou Dobbs or seen his program on CNN, and my mom is what I call a knee-jerk capitalist. And I find that a lot of people are like this. And I am definitely a capitalist. I am all for someone making as much money as they possibly can. However, where I am against it is when other people are paying for it and the compensation is not fairly tied to what the investor is making, if someone else is investing in their deal, their company, whatever it is. And I'll just start off with this, and I've got a whole bunch more newspaper articles to share with you, and then I've got an audio track I want to share with you that I think you'll find interesting. But let's start off with the Lou Dobbs part. He says in War on the Middle Class, he says, median CEO compensation went from $1.8 million in 1992 to $6.1 million in 2000. CEO pay increased 340% from 1992 to 2002. That's 10 years, folks. Well, compensation for rank-and-file employees increased a mere 36%. By 2004, the average CEO pay was $9.6 million, with 100 CEOs making more than $10 million and 40 making more than $20 million. In 2005, the median pay for CEOs of the 100 largest U.S. companies increased to $17.9 million, an increase of 25% from the year before. The average employee, by the way, got a raise of 3.1%. During the same period. Well, with what Lou Dobbs is saying there, doesn't it make sense that you need to set your own rules for finance and financial security in your life? Well, that's what we're doing here as smart, prudent, conservative real estate investors. Dobbs goes on to say, in the past few years, we've seen levels of pay for individual CEOs that is beyond most people's comprehension. Money that sounds like it belongs on a company's revenue column rather than on someone's paycheck. In 2004, Terry Semel, chairman and CEO of Yahoo, was paid $120 million. Lou Frankfurt, head of Coach, was paid $58 million. Robert Nardelli, who runs Home Depot, made $36 million. Ed Zander of Motorola got $32 million. And Meg Whitman of eBay got $26 million. Most CEOs were paid above and beyond these salaries in stock options, which gave them an incentive to run up their company's stock prices for their own immediate benefit at the expense of long-term corporate gains. Now, I'll stop with Lou Dobbs for a moment. This is me talking. How many of you have ever worked for, or maybe you currently work for, a publicly traded company? Think about that. Now, I have a lot of friends and clients who've worked for or currently work for publicly traded companies, and I'm constantly hearing them talk about how what goes on inside the company has almost no relation whatsoever to what is going on with the company's stock. And you know what that tells me? It says, why do I, as an investor, want to be susceptible to a market full of speculators, people trading, selling stock short or long, or trading options, or whatever the heck they're doing, when the company's core business many times has nothing to do with what's going on with the stock? Now, I don't know how many of you listening have ever owned your own business, or you might currently own your own business. I have for the past 11 years. And I will tell you that businesses are incredibly complex creatures. There are so many things that can go wrong with a business at any given time. So many incredible complexities that influence the value of that business and its future existence at all. So let's go on with the Lou Dobbs here. The standard rationalization for these astronomical salaries by CEOs, their boards of directors, and their consultants, and most of those, by the way, are friends, old college buddies of the CEOs, is that the CEOs are worth it because the companies they run benefit from their leadership and bring great value to their shareholders. Well, how then do they explain the fact that over the past 5 years, the CEOs of AT&T, Bell South, Hewlett-Packard, Home Depot, Lucent, Merck, Pfizer, Safeway, Time Warner, Verizon, and Walmart were paid an aggregate of $865 million in compensation? That's almost $1 billion. Well, shareholders lost during the same period, a total of $640 billion. Clearly, these CEOs were not being paid for delivering value to those who held stock in their companies. You know what I found, everybody? I found that a company has three audiences that it needs to please at any given time. A company has its customers, its shareholders, and its employees. And so far, in my experience, I have never found a company that can consistently please all three audiences, because these three audiences have conflicting agendas and conflicting motivations. I mean, think about it. Employees want the highest pay and they want job security. Shareholders want the highest returns right now. They want instant gratification. And then customers want the lowest price and the best deal. So think about the companies you know. I mean, I think about the big name companies that I know. I think about companies that please customers. Well, Disney seems to be a company that pleases customers. Nordstrom, a company that pleases customers. Yet with those two companies, I've certainly heard lots of news about how employees are upset with them, suing them over wage disputes and things like this. Now, you know, this is just general data. This is not very specific, so pardon me if I'm not exactly an expert on this. But I've just kind of noticed that over the years in the news. Now you look at a company that has great products like Apple Computer and has also, at least recently, been very pleasing to their shareholders. So what about employees? Well, Apple has kind of a cult following, and their employees seem to love Apple. Now, I don't know if they pay them really well. I don't know if they just love their products or all of the above. Maybe this is a company that has succeeded in pleasing all three audiences. But then again, let's look at Apple's customers. Well, they seem to like their products, but hey, their products are expensive. I have a MacBook Pro I'm looking at right now and an iPhone. And I tell you, I can get much cheaper computers and phones elsewhere, but they're really innovative products. Whatever the case. So we see how the heads of companies, the boards of directors, and the consultants are not being paid in relation to their shareholders. I believe that is unfair. In fact, Lou Dobbs goes on to say, CEO compensation is often directly inverse to the performance of the companies they lead. Because their compensation is not tied to how the business performs, their pay isn't a reflection of their executive ability, but an aberration. The former CEO of Time Warner, Jerry Levin, walked away with a $163 million package after his last year at what was then called AOL Time Warner. How much do you think he should have made that year if he hadn't entered into the worst corporate merger in history? Interesting question. One that eventually led to the write-off of nearly $100 billion. Levin's story is not unique. Alfred Lerner, the former CEO of MBNA, you've heard of MBNA, sure, you have, big credit card company, financial institution, made more than $194 million in 2002, a $9 million salary, and another $186 million in options and other compensation. Lerner died that same year, and his successor, Charles Cowley was paid nearly $49 million. That's nearly a quarter of $1 billion in compensation for just two people. Two people, quarter of $1 billion. With such high-paid executives, how did you think people who'd invested in MBNA fare? Return to them was negative 18%. And then there's Larry Ellison, founder and CEO of Oracle. From 2000 to 2002, Larry's personal take from the company was $781 million. That's almost $1 billion in just two short years. Not bad, huh? But shareholder return was negative 61% during the same time period.
Just a reminder, you're listening to Flashback Friday. Our new episodes are published every Monday and every Wednesday.
Bonuses this last holiday season were just handed out on Wall Street. In an article here, January 4th, this is off MSNBC, MSN.com, it says $15,000 bottle of bubbly, no problem. Big holiday bonuses are flooding the New York City economy. It says that a restaurant owner, Michael Aaron, learned that Wall Street investment banks were going to be shelling out record bonuses this holiday season. The savvy wine merchant uncorked his own plan to make serious dough. He paid for a double-page ad in the New York Times boasting of a rare-sized bottle of 1995 Dom Perignon. The price tag, $14,950. Then there's a little side story here. Santa has been good to bosses. December 19th, are cushy executive bonuses an outrage or an essential part of the world's largest economy? And then you keep going on with the story. It says jaw-dropping bonuses. This is Goldman Sachs, okay? The company reported staggering profit last week of $9.4 billion. Now, hey, look, folks. I do not object when shareholders are making money, when customers are getting good deals, to big bonuses. I am definitely a capitalist. So don't get the wrong idea here. I just noticed that these things are not proportionate. They're not related to each other. They were dedicating $16.5 billion for salaries, bonuses, and other benefits. The upper echelon of Goldman Sachs, called the Golden 25, could get at least $25 million each. Lehman Brothers Holdings Incorporated and Bear Stearns Companies said they would pay out about $12 billion in compensation, more than $300,000 per employee. Morgan Stanley, the second largest U.S. investment house, gave chief executive John Mack $40 million in stock and options for 2006, reflecting one of the largest bonuses awarded to a Wall Street CEO. The bonus numbers are especially mind-boggling when compared to the average salaries of New Yorkers. Comptroller estimated that bonuses will average $137,000 in 2006. Most Wall Streeters make much more than that. Excluding people working on Wall Street, the average New Yorker earned $56,000 in 2005. Wall Street accounts for less than 5% of all the jobs in the city, but more than 20% of all the wages. Now, real estate is a big beneficiary of these big bonuses, as plenty of bankers look to upgrade their digs or buy their first pad. A lot of Wall Streeters have been pounding the pavement, anticipating the big bonuses, and they're prepared to pay tremendous amounts of money for real estate. Earlier this month, one broker in New York said she sold 11 apartments. More than half of those were buyers who worked on Wall Street. She said that she has about 200 apartments for sale, ranging from $500,000 to $6 million. Many of those, she said, will go to bankers on Wall Street. The bonuses heat up the market in another way because people anticipate them, and there they come. Now, let's take a look at how this ties in. I entitled this podcast, Thou Shalt Maintain Control and Pools Are for Fools. How long does it take us to learn our lesson that we shouldn't be investing and pooling our money? Pools are for fools. We shouldn't be investing it in anybody else's deal. We should be direct investors. We buy our own piece of property, and then we keep the profits for ourselves. We keep the benefits for ourselves. There's a lot of bogus dealings in real estate. I mean, real estate is definitely not immune to this kind of stuff. You know, when you invest in these TICs, tenant in common deals, LLCs, limited liability companies set up by promoters, REITs, real estate investment trust, or any sort of fund or partnership in a real estate deal, think about what happens. Most of these promoters of these vehicles have big fat expense accounts tied to them. Of course, they take an acquisition fee when they buy the property. They take a disposition fee when they sell it. They take a big management fee all along the way. They're probably getting wined and dined by the property managers and getting all sorts of perks there. And then they fly out to see the project. They might fly out first class on your dime. Then they stay at nice hotels. Folks, you just can't control this stuff. Invest in things you have control over. Now, let's just look through the newspaper. So, this is the Friday, January 18th Wall Street Journal. It says on the front page of the money investing section, more zeros for investors as subprime write-downs top $100 billion. Dow Industrials drop 307 points. Small investors brace for more. The pool of red, there's a chart here, write-downs by banks, brokerage firms, and others in the subprime mortgage downturn. Merrill Lynch had write-downs of over $22 billion. Think about it. What if you own stock in Merrill? How about Citigroup? Almost $20 billion. UBS, over $14 billion. Morgan Stanley, $9.4 billion. And the list goes on and on and on. Why would you own stock in these companies? A stock market is necessary to help a capitalist society grow, but I'll tell you, I want to maintain control over my investments. Under review, on the same front page of the journal, ripple effects of much harsher debt ratings. When you were watching this whole subprime fiasco unfold and this totally irresponsible lending, I was talking about this 3 years ago, how this would come home to roost. They package this money on Wall Street, not even disclosing what kind of debt instruments, these complicated financial instruments, were inside these funds that people purchased as mortgage-backed securities, as mortgage-backed bond funds. And investors like you and me, we were victims of all of this. You look at the Los Angeles Times, December 14th, 07, just about a month ago. It's right on the front page of the California section. OC, that's where I live in Orange County, again, seeing snags with Merrill. Investment firm blamed in county's bankruptcy, remember Orange County declared bankruptcy back in 1994, was the largest broker of newly shaky securities. You might remember that story about a guy named Bob Citron and how he invested with Merrill Lynch, and they did all these derivatives and these really complex financial investments that led to Orange County's filing bankruptcy. You look at the Los Angeles Times, January 18th, just last Friday. It said, front page of the business section, brokers did well in a bad 2007. The five biggest investment firms paid employees record amounts as investors struggle. It was a bad year on Wall Street for investors, but a great year to be a broker. Wall Street's five largest investment firms paid record amounts in compensation in 2007, despite the fact that three of the five firms posted quarterly losses as a result of souring investments in subprime mortgages. And then it goes on to talk about Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Merrill Lynch, Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns, et cetera, et cetera. They shelled out $65.6 billion in compensation, okay, up about 8% from last year. And investors were losing money the whole time. Same front page, some key indexes hit a bear trap. Dow drops 306 points amid recession fears, despite Fed Chief Bernanke's backing a stimulus plan. Now, if you've been listening to my Creating Wealth podcast, you know that all of this stuff the Fed is doing, what will it mean to us as real estate investors? it's actually good news because it will cause more inflation. And with inflation, as we've talked about before, we win in not one, but two ways. We have an inflation-indexed asset, real estate, and the commodities that go into building a house or a commercial building sitting on that land. As long as you are buying very, very cheap land, but a high structural or high improvement cost, as we've talked about in the past, you should do very well in this loosening of the money supply that the Fed is creating, because the ingredients to build that structure go up in value. Real estate historically has performed better than inflation. It's been a great hedge against inflation. That will benefit us. And then, in the second way, we borrow to buy real estate. We use someone else's money, OPM, as much as possible. Thank you for listening to the Creating Wealth Show. This is Jason Hartman, your host, and we appreciate you following the show. We have many, many episodes, hundreds of episodes, and some of the older episodes have been archived and placed in our members section, and that applies to this one. So we include a sample that's about 25 minutes long, and then for the rest of the show, you can go to our members section at jasonhartman.com. Many of the other shows are still in their full-length, complete version. However, some of the shows, like this one, are in our members section where you can hear the show in its entirety. And again, you just need to go to jasonhartman.com and you can get the full show there in the members section, plus a whole bunch of other great members benefits and resources, whether it be documents, forms, contracts, articles, other video and audio content. Just a great resource. So be sure to join as a member at jasonhartman.com. And thanks again for listening to the Creating Wealth Show.
This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guests' opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.